Radio Catskill, right after the local edition.
From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm your host, Jason Dolt. And yesterday was an election day, primary day in Pennsylvania, but there's also a special election in our listening area. We're going to go into it in depth with reporters from Vote Beat and Spotlight PA coming up in the second half of the program. But first, here on a Wednesday evening, it's time for us to get the latest local news from the River Reporter. And for that, we turn to Ruby Rayner of the River Reporter. Ruby, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
So let's start off quick. Yesterday was Election Day in Pennsylvania.
True, and Republican candidate Jeff Olsemer won yesterday's special election for the 139th district for Pennsylvania's General Assembly. But to be clear, Olsemer will then face off against Skibber, the Democratic candidate, in the general election. So they will see each other again.
Okay, so that's kind of the headline there, but Olsemer got the most votes out of those in the primary. Skibber did not, but Skibber will be on the ballot in November.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And just for like a little bit more detail about the two, Skibber did solidly well in Pike, which is her home county, but didn't necessarily make up the difference in Wayne, which is Olsemer's home county, and Olsemer narrowly beat her in Pike County and then did very well in his home county, Wayne County. So it seems like if Skibber wants to, have a chance in the general, that she will need to definitely do some work in Pike County.
Okay, and just a reminder to the listener again that we will be going in depth on not just a special election result, but all the results from yesterday's primary day in Pennsylvania coming up in the second half of the program as we speak to reporters from Spotlight PA and Vote Beat. But in other stories that you're looking at, Ruby, Sullivan West School District is looking at having to make some cuts. Is that right?
Yes. Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. So it kind of hangs in the balance of what's going on in Albany. In something called the Hold Harmless, which is basically this part of policy from the state that guarantees schools receive the same funding regardless of the number of students year over year or if they have a surplus. And the intention of that policy was that there was to give schools consistency in creating their budgets and stability in creating their budgets. But Governor Kathy Hochul in December discussed potentially canceling the Hold Harmless, which would change the foundational aid that a lot of school districts receive. And one in particular that it would significantly impact if the Hold Harmless is canceled on the state level is Sullivan West's financial foundational financial aid from the state.
Right. So when will they know?
So not completely sure. And it's as of last Thursday, both assembly members, Aileen Gunther said that they are hopeful that it won't be necessarily canceled because Hochul delayed the cancellation of the Hold Harmless. But that despite that, Superintendent of Sullivan West District says that they're really preparing for the inevitability that if it doesn't happen this year, that it could happen next year. And just to give kind of like listeners a context of how large the scale is, it's $2 million, which is like a large amount of foundational aid that they receive from the state that would be cut if Hold Harmless was canceled. And it would be actually, like, that means that they, if it was canceled, that the Sullivan West School District would get less foundational aid than they did in 2016, 8 years ago. So it would definitely need you know, there would need to be adjustments to the budget. But they have to create their budget before they necessarily know if the hold harmless will be canceled or not. So contingency plans are being made by the superintendent's district, and they're hoping that it won't be canceled, but planning for the future in which it could be.
The goal of the government was to try to make things simpler for school districts. In this case, at least, they've got to kind of make double plans depending what actually happens.
Yeah, so the reason Hochul says that repealing the hold harmless is necessary is because there's been a decrease in the number of students in schools in New York State. In Sullivan West actually specifically has lost 42% of its population since it was created in 1999 to 2000. So that's just to give context. That's why Hochul has been like, there's money that's being funneled that was supposed to be a stabilizing thing, but it's really going to empty classrooms. But it ends up, if this was repealed, that it would disproportionately impact rural school districts, according to the New York State Council of School Superintendent Robert Lowry, is one of the things he was pointing out. And Sullivan West is one of those school districts that would definitely be impacted by the repeal of the hold harmless policy.
Okay, and now over to Highland. You've been following what's been going on in the town of Highland, been letting us know. What's the latest with how things stand in Highland? Are folks starting to get along?
I think folks have definitely identified that there is a communication barrier among the town board. And so there are two different things that they are trying to enact in order to solve this communication between them. So one of the things is that they've Supervisor Pizzolatto and town board member Haas, who have had very open disagreements on the town board. Town board member Haas is the only town board member from the previous administration and feels that I think a lot of her institutional knowledge isn't being listened to or heard. And Pizzolatto, who was elected recently, I think feels as though he's been elected and people want change and that there's real change that needs to be done in the town, and that's what he's trying to do. But they've both agreed to meet at with the Dispute Resolution Center, which is a nonprofit that helps parties in conflict reach practical agreements. And they work with a multitude of different people in conflict, but they have worked with town boards in the past. And the potential scheduled date for that they've both agreed to is May 9th. So that will be coming up soon. That was one way that communication and conflict resolution was on the horizon in Highland. And then the other one is that they have expanded to buy 10 more email addresses. So there's been some talk of emails bouncing and miscommunication and getting in contact with another. And so they're going to be purchasing 10 more email addresses, which there was discussion of requiring, but they're not going to require it. But hopefully those two things are going to smooth communication.
Sorry, the question of requiring email?
Yeah, so there had been some issues with town board members not being able to get in contact with another, and people saying that they didn't receive certain information and whatnot. And so Supervisor Pizzolatto suggested requiring everyone to use the town emails for town business. But there was some, you know, certain board members thought that potentially wasn't, they couldn't really require something like that. Jim Act said, you can just call me on the phone. So they ended up purchasing the new emails so that there would be that option and hopefully provide people the opportunity to use those email addresses, but they are not going to require that.
Okay, but coming full circle from where we started, they've identified there are communication issues that are, based on where people are coming from in terms of their knowledge, their ideas of what should be done, their personality. Those are communication conflicts, but you're saying there's also possibly communication problems that are actual technical communication problems.
Yes, correct. And so these, hopefully, these two different things are addressing those on those two prongs.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you for staying on top of that. And I'll be interested to hear what comes out of this dispute resolution process. moving on to other stories?
I can move you along with the river towns. There's some short updates from the town of Tustin.
Yeah, and is this about the pavilion in the town of Tustin?
Yes, the pavilion is turtling along.
All right. So what's the latest?
The latest is that there's going to be some adjustments, and then the pavilion will be put out for bid. This does not necessarily mean that the pavilion will be built, but it will give the town some more knowledge about the initial cost of the project, which is a pavilion structure at Tustin Multi-Generational Park, which is located in the flats area of the town. And there has been some strong people against the building of this pavilion and some people who have been strongly in favor. So we will continue to see. Right now, it's not really quite known the full cost of it because this bid won't include the bathroom in the pavilion, which will need to be required, but it will give a slight idea, and does the fact that they are putting it out for bid indicates that the project is moving forward.
Right. And again, and when we started, you said turtling forward. That's with a T. It's not hurtling forward, meaning it's moving forward, but slowly.
Yeah, important distinction between turtling and hurtling.
Okay, and how about Tustin Youth?
Yeah, this is actually really exciting. So the county has awarded Tustin Youth, which has expanded a lot of its programming for children and kids in the town of Tustin over the past couple of years, and they thought that they would be awarded $10,000 from the county, but they were actually awarded $27,500 from the county. So they've received some extra funds to, you know, bolster their programming, and $7,500 of that is for holiday events. And they, in the past, have held a 4th of July event and won't be holding that 4th of July event this year because the Fireman Field that it's typically held on, the owner, Rick Lander, denied the application because it conflicted with his business. And the county was really disappointed to actually hear that because they said it was something that the whole county looked forward to. But Tustin Youth is really excited to discuss what they're going to use this extra funding for and continue to have programming throughout the summer for kids on Wednesdays and Sundays.
Okay, great. Well, Ruby, I want to thank you for being here with us and going over all this news.
Thank you so much, Jason.
And all the stories that we just talked about with Ruby are up at riverreporter.com. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we dive deep into yesterday's election day in Pennsylvania, both the primary and in our listening area, special election in Pennsylvania's 139th. We have the latest for you. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll remember Henry Mancini, born 100 years ago and composer of many classic tunes for TV and movies. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Coming up tonight at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Listen to Farm and Country Saturday morning at 10. The best of rural life and agriculture for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. That's Farm and Country Saturday morning at 10, only on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to the Local Edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole. It was an election day in Pennsylvania yesterday, and on the ballot were Senate and House contests. 7 candidates that were running for their party's nominations for Attorney General, and the special election in Pennsylvania's 139th state district in our listening area. to fill the seat that was vacated when State Representative Joe Adams resigned in February. On Radio Chatskill this morning, Tim Bruno spoke with Carter Walker, Pennsylvania reporter for Vote Beat and Spotlight PA, and Stephen Caruso, Capitol reporter for Spotlight PA, and they went over the primary and special election results. Stephen Caruso starts off on that special election.
So Jeff Olsheimer, a local insurance company owner and a township commissioner, beat Democrat Robin Skeeber. She was a former county worker administrator. So, you know, this is a hold for Republicans. I think that was about expected. You know, that area is pretty red in the this is a special election that puts Republicans back to, gives them an extra vote in the closely divided Pennsylvania House. So, you know, this is a chamber separated by one vote. So every vote kind of counts. Yeah. Every vote you can muster.
Yeah, the 139th covers parts of southern Wayne and northern Pike counties. One vote advantage there, but only through November, because in the fun part of this is that even though Olsheimer bested Democrat Robin Skeeber in the special election, they'll face off again in November for the general election.
Yes. This is just for the rest of this term. They'll face each other again, and they will. Olsheimer actually faced a primary to try and get back on the ballot, and actually he didn't win that. Though, to be honest, like, there are times when people have won the special and lost the primary, but, you know, it didn't happen this time.
Wait to be seen for what happens in November now. So in the other key Senate, state house and Senate races for the state, you mentioned the slim margin. Is there anything else that's impacting the balance of power in yesterday's results?
No, not at this point. There have been some interesting primary results that we're still kind of wading through. One of the most noteworthy and of Navy national importance was State Representative Kevin Boyle from Philadelphia lost his primary. He had suffered from some public mental health issues. There had been an arrest warrant issued for him, and then it was withdrawn due to apparently a procedural error. But either way, he lost his primary pretty definitively in Philadelphia. So he will be leaving the General Assembly come November, unless, you know, he manages to launch some independent bid. But he lost to Sean Dougherty, who was backed by House Democratic leadership. So that would say is probably the most noteworthy result. But otherwise, nothing more to report until November.
And let's talk about the presidential race. The outcome pretty much known. However, it is a key swing state. And is there anything to read from the margins of victory? I mean, Donald Trump won on the Republican side. Democratic primary, Joe Biden won. But there were a couple of other people still on the ballot, even though they've dropped out of the race. Does that impact any sort of things you can foretell with what might happen in the general?
I think it's really hard to tell. Obviously, there's a lot of tea reading that goes in any presidential election because, you know, folks want certainty. But, the main thing you could probably point to, Nikki Haley did, I think, surprisingly well in a few places, but Donald Trump still won every county. Pennsylvania is a state where I think there's a very strong establishment party that's kind of skeptical of Trump. I talked to a few voters who even were skeptical of Trump in deep red regions like Lancaster County yesterday. For Biden, obviously there's the uncommitted write-in campaign, but as I'm sure Carter's going to get into, like, trying to count write-ins in Pennsylvania is tricky. Counties don't necessarily have who the write-in was for, and finding a benchmark to figure out if what the write-ins we're seeing are actual uncommitted votes for Biden versus, you know, just somebody writing in Mickey Mouse or writing in some other name because they're just frustrated with the general state of play. It's hard to say. You know, I think overall, like, you know, we will know closer to November what the stakes are like and what the state of play is.
Carter, do you want to talk about that a little bit, about the write-in?
Yeah, Stephen's exactly right. I mean, voting uncommitted is not like it is in other states where that's an actual option you can tick off. Voters have to write that in the blank space on their ballot. And counties kind of handle these differently. Some will record every write-in and post them online for each precinct. Some, like the county I was in yesterday, they won't do that unless the write-ins reach a certain amount. So to know whether this, campaign to get folks to write in Biden as a protest was successful or exactly how many votes it's got, the campaign that put it on is probably going to have to call every county and determine exactly how many uncommitted votes that they got. But I will say that the write-ins were up in a number of counties where this effort was most likely to be successful. I saw some reporting from the Inquirer that there's big increases in just the pure number of write-ins in Philadelphia, Allegheny County, Montgomery, Delaware, you know, the Democratic strongholds where there would be the voters that would want to push back against Biden. But again, like Stephen said, a lot of those could be Mickey Mouse. They could be Donald Duck, and we'll just have to wait and see exactly how many were uncommitted. But fair to say that there was at least an uptick and probably something the Biden campaign is watching this morning.
You mentioned some of the protest votes or some of the votes against Biden. There's been some folks that are either writing in or uncommitted across the country. In the Pittsburgh area district, there was some indication about how some of the public sentiment on the war in Israel and Gaza is going. Can you talk a little bit about the progressive Democrat that, you know, fended off the challenge and what that means in terms of the shift in public sentiment on the war among Democrats?
Yeah, so, you know, out in Pittsburgh, Summer Lee, a longtime progressive state rep who became a congresswoman in 2022, she won a primary against Bhavini Patel, who was backed by AIPAC and a lot of other interests that are tied in with Israel. I mean, you know, I don't know if that says anything specific about the war in Israel or the war in Gaza. I mean, I think that Summer Lee had, you know, she faced a very bruising primary in 2022 that AIPAC was involved in, winning a 3-4 way race, if I recall correctly. And then this year is 1-on-1. But she really managed to get a lot of the establishment behind her. You know, like the candidate she ran against didn't have a lot of support from anyone in Pittsburgh outside of basically just outside groups. And Pittsburgh's a very parochial city. I mean, I think a lot of Pennsylvania is very parochial. So, you know, I don't know if it's really easy to kind of put the national narratives onto some of these Pennsylvania races. I mean, the main thing I would highlight, honestly, that, you know, in Pennsylvania, Democrats winning in November is really incumbent statewide on having good turnout in Philadelphia. And turnout in Philadelphia has historically been going down. So, like, I would almost lump the concerns about, like, uncommitted in with the fact that, like, Philadelphia turnout isn't good. And I think the uncommitted vote here is just another sign of the fact that, like, the local party sometimes doesn't get people out to vote. People don't feel enthused to vote for Democrats in some ways. And you know, write-ins are just another way, like, you know, it, of people expressing their displeasure with the status quo, whether that's somebody who's going to the polls to cast a really, you know, a vote because they're protesting U.S. aid for Israel, or someone who just, you know, wants new options of people who's, you know, for who don't come from political families or what have you. Like, you know, these are all ways of registering a protest. It could come from a few places. So I think maybe the signal is still Democrats have work to do. But, you know, the exact cause of that signal, it could be a million things. Yeah.
I think Stephen is bringing up the real main takeaway from yesterday. Turnout was, you know, by back of the envelope calculations, just from the top level race, the president was, it's about in the mid 20s, around 24-25%. And I looking back at the 2020 primary, we were up in the 30% range. So turnout was really down. And even just from the election directors and the county commissioners, you were hearing the sense from them as they were visiting polls that, yeah, you know, it's just the enthusiasm's not there. People are not showing up. So I think that's going to be one of the biggest determining factors when we get to November is just how many people actually show up at the polls.
And, you know, I mean, I guess because at the presidential level, as we said, it's sort of a foregone conclusion there. But did you think that there was some more engagement down ballot with some of these other seats, including, you know, there were some races, attorney general, you had races for treasurer, some other, the auditor general, some of those other kind of seats within the state?
Carter, if you don't mind me jumping in, I'll just say, like, yeah, I, you know, from a day of driving around Pennsylvania, I was mostly encountering a lot of voters who really weren't engaged, who just kind of showed up because they did. One person told me they almost forgot to vote, but then they ran out. Multiple people told me they were embarrassed to remember. They couldn't even tell me who they voted for like attorney general, for instance. Then, like, you know, a lot of people were saying, I like to be more informed, but it felt like a lot of people who showed up out of obligation, and not saying that's a good or bad thing. I mean, it's particularly good, I'd say, in, you know, living in a democracy, but I don't know. I just don't think there was a lot of enthusiasm. People seem to really be checked in or checked out while voting. And, you know, I think that just says more about where we are as a country right now than anything about the races. In fact, one of the biggest surprises in Pennsylvania was the win of Erin McClellan, an Allegheny County businesswoman for the state treasurer's office over State Rep Ryan Bizarro, who is endorsed by a state party. Bizarro had a lot of other endorsements. I think there was a general expectation he'd win, but McClellan won, and, you know, I think it's still early. I'm still getting some of my ducks in a row in a reporting wise, but I think the general impression is just, you know, the people who showed up didn't do as much research as you'd think. So they didn't have time to see all the endorsements that were racked up, and they decided to go for McClellan because they just thought her profile seemed better when they just, you know, maybe took 5 minutes looking into the race. Mm.
McClellan faces Republican Stacey Garrity this fall. Let's just run down quickly the Attorney General and Auditor General races. And then, Carter, I want to turn to your reporting that you broke yesterday about mail-in ballot rejections.
Yeah, Stephen, do you want to talk about the results we saw there?
Yeah. You know, so in the Attorney General's race, Eugene DePasquale won. He is a longtime state office holder. He was Auditor General. He had name recognition, which I think really helped him pull through. And he'll face Dave Sunday for the Attorney General's position, which is open, wide open race. Michelle Henry, the current placeholder, she isn't running for re-election. And then in the Auditor General's race, Malcolm Kenyatta, same thing, another kind of known name, a Philadelphia progressive. He's one of the first Black LGBTQ representative in the General Assembly. He won the nod for Auditor General. He'll face Tim DeFore and in November for that nod. So, you know, we have some pretty interesting row office races that will be coming through, but, you know, we'll have to wait to see how those start to shake out.
All right. If you're just joining us, we are talking to Stephen Caruso of Spotlight PA and Carter Walker of VoteBeat and Spotlight PA about yesterday's Pennsylvania primary results. All 17 members of Pennsylvania's U.S. House delegation, 9 Democrats and 8 Republicans, will be seeking re-election in 2024 in District 8 in our listening area. Matt Cartwright, the incumbent, was uncontested and will face Robert Bresnahan, who was also uncontested in the general. Before we go, any other key takeaways from yesterday's primary, Stephen and Carter?
Well, I think for me is that it just went very smoothly. We didn't see any major issues like we saw in Luzerne in 2022 or Northampton last year, which I think is making state officials and county election officials really breathe a sigh of relief. You know, we don't want any more unintended attention to how we run our election that can give people looking to sow doubt any more tools.
And I would say on the political end, like looking at state house races overall, there honestly was not a lot of drama. A lot of incumbents held on. A lot of candidates backed by very progressive, very conservative groups haven't seemed to have done super well. So I'm just kind of still looking for results. But so far, it almost seems like it's been a win for the establishment in a few places.
Mm-hmm. More to come. I know we'll be talking to you guys again. Stephen Caruso of Spotlight PA, the Capitol reporter there. Spotlight PA is the independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit newsroom dedicated to high-quality investigative and public service journalism about Pennsylvania state government and statewide issues. And Carter Walker with VoteBeat PA and Spotlight PA. VoteBeat is the nonpartisan local reporting on elections and voting. Thank you guys both for joining us, and see you before November.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you to Tim Bruno. This has been the Local Edition. I've been your host, Jason Dole. I'll be back to do it tomorrow night all over again. Thank you for listening. Do keep on listening. We're on air. Always live streaming at WJFFradio.org. Coming up, we've got Retro Cocktail Hour at 7, but first, it's The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill supporters include SUNY Sullivan, a community college in the Sullivan Catskills focused on preparing students for the future. More information at sunysullivan.edu. Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. LivingstonManorNY.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, we bring you a first-of-its-kind investigation into how prolonged exposure to toxins affects the health of workers, the workers who rebuild American cities after natural disasters.
These workers are just as vulnerable now as they were almost 20 years ago.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon.